too. So how did you all go with MIF? Did you have a good time watching the film there and getting to spend time with the audience there? That would have been quite exciting.
Opening the world premiere of Westgate was very exciting. To have it in Acme in that cinema was, yeah. I think I was actually sitting next to Max and Adrian, and I would turn to Adrian. I was like, it looks so cinematic up in the screen, and how it's supposed to be kind of viewed, and to hear people's reactions and laughing, or like when they would go all quiet or lean in. I think it's a really different experience from watching it on like a little computer screen, which is not really made for with the 4:3 ratio and everything.
Yeah, because you want that kind of locked in experience, don't you? And the cinema really amplifies that in a lot of ways. But I guess I'd love to start with a question to yourself, Adrian, which is talking about the history of this particular story, because I understand that it's one that's written, well, influenced from your own life. Can you talk about pulling from your own experiences to write Westgate?
Yeah, well, this was a film that I wrote. I turned the age that my mother was when she had me, and I started reflecting on sort of that part of her life and my life in the late 90s when she was raising me as a single parent. And at the same time, I noticed that she and I share this very similar flaw that I thought was very interesting to discover on film, about pride and how pride can sort of be a roadblock in sometimes in you developing as a person and, you know, accepting help and being able to like move on. And I found all that really interesting, and I wanted to talk about like those sorts of struggles that people have. And I wanted to sort of bring in my community and my culture and my heritage and sort of mix them all together. And as well as that, also bring in some real history with the Westgate collapse and how that affected my community and the people in my community of my heritage, and how that affected like generations to come.
And we'll talk about history and the way that it plays out in the present in a moment. But I want to throw to you, Sarah, like, that's a fairly big thing to kind of take on board and go, Adrian's written this script, it's influenced by his own life. And I'll throw to you in a second as well, Max, because, you know, that's probably even more pressure knowing that there is a bit of influence from the director on the character that you're playing. But what's it like knowing that you're going to have to step in and be a version of his mum?
I think like when I can't remember if you told me off the bat that it was based on your mum, but I know when I got the script, I don't think I knew it was exactly your mum and your story, but when I read the script, I was like, oh, wow, this is a world and culture that I grew up with. This could have been my mother or my hairdresser or my auntie or my, like, these were women that I hadn't seen or read represented in Australian cinema, particularly more so in like American. I think American has kind of allowed for the Italian American kind of culture to be put into screen. But then I think when I met up with Adrian, he did tell me it was his mother's story. And I was like, oh, wow. Okay. This is your story. This is quite significant. And I believe my like first question was to him was like, well, would your mother be open to like meeting me and having a chat? Because I want to hear her experience. I want to hear her life. And after we did have that chat, and she's a beautiful woman, very open, like, and I was like sitting there writing while she's talking to me and just getting a real flair for who she was. It was really beautiful because it felt like she was kind of giving me the gift of her history, but also allowing me to creatively take the character with all the knowledge I know, and like, even like the, you know, the genetics, you know, my own, because it's kind of got some generational trauma, which I relate to through, you know, being a second generation immigrant. And like, I'm like generations of Italian women, putting that on the shoulders as well. I was able to kind of integrate, and it was actually like a beautiful experience, actually, because I felt like it was kind of all the women I know, like all of those women of that time of the 90s and living in the 90s, and that Adrian gifted a female character that we haven't seen on screen as well for that time period. Like, I think I spoke about at one of the Q&As, like 20 years ago, this would have been a male character as the lead role, but that it's a woman and that she's fiercely independent and is prideful and all has all these characteristics that are very entrenched in Italian women culture, but not seen was, yeah, I feel like she gave me just her blessing. I think there was like a blessings. Like it may not have been like spoken, but it was unconsciously kind of, or subconsciously there. Adrian was present at this meeting, so I
no
think
pressure,
he knows. No.
But she also got to see how my mum and I, like how we are together and how that influenced how Netta and Julian are as well.
And Max, for you as well, I mean, yeah. Stepping in and knowing that you're going to have to play a version of Adrian too, what was that like? And did you know as well that, you know, there's truth created within this script here?
Yeah, well, when I first read it and I knew that Julian was like really passionate for footy and how that was like kind of his, you know, thing and what he has a really big love for, I can relate to that a lot because I played soccer for like 10 years of my life, maybe like less, maybe something like that. So I understand like, you know, like say, for example, missing a soccer match and all that and kind of feeling that like, it's heartbreaking, you know, like when you're that passionate for something as well and just well, that's what you want to kind of do. So yeah, so it's kind of same with me and, you know, yeah.
I mean, it's part of culture, right? Soccer is a huge part of culture. Yeah, family's a huge part of Italian culture as well. And Sarah, you mentioned rightly so that it's not really been seen in Australian screens all that much, but it's such an integral part of what multicultural Australia looks like as well. I live in Perth and we have an Italian club down here in Fremantle, which is like a major aspect of what that city is. You know, you go along the Cappuccino Strip and Gino's is like the cafe place that you go. It's like part of the culture. It's part of the city. And yet we don't see the history of that, right? And we don't see the women who have helped bring it up and everything. And that's why I find so powerful about this film is it's honouring and recognising that past. But also, maybe more importantly, it's honouring and recognising the complicated place that your character sits in a modern Australia in the you know turn of the century, which is a really difficult thing to put on screen because, you know, you're representing something that is a culture that we don't get to see very often. But it's also, you know, 2 feet in 2 different worlds and trying to find a place to stand safely and normally. That's a huge thing to put on screen and to process. Adrian, Sarah, how do you find the place to be able to start exploring that?
Well, I guess I always found it really interesting growing up at the age like Julian was because I would hang out with my mum and be at my nonna's and she'd be very Italian there. And then everywhere else, she would sort of shred that identity of herself and become this like Australian woman and have all of her partners were Aussie and all of her friends were Aussie and she anglicized her name. And growing up, I was so confused, like, why is she Italian here and not Italian here? And, you know, especially in the 90s, you know, now not so much, she's fine with it. But, you know, growing up as a woman as an Italian woman in the 60s and 70s, you know, the amount of racial abuse she got and, you know, like she was ashamed to be it because to her being Italian was like being someone who wasn't wanted here. So she just became an Australian, like dyed her hair. And so I just wanted to explore that. And, you know, for the longest time we had Alla Brandi, which was like the Australian Italian story, which I love, obviously. I love that film, but that's a Sydney story. And I wanted to tell the Melbourne one.
Yeah, like the more I watch this film, and I think even after Myth, I really sat with, oh wow, I looked at my past growing up and how I also wanted to assimilate. Like but it just was like something you had to do. It wasn't even like a choice. It's like if you want to survive school or survive, because I remember like I would bring very Italian food and people would be like, what are you eating? Or that smells, or like my last name is very Italian, couldn't pronounce it. And it kind of made me go, oh, wow, this is really touching that we actually got the opportunity to make this film because the struggle was really there. It may be forgotten because we have like created the culture. And in Perth, I've got family in Perth. I go there. They don't even speak English still. My Zias, they're all like in the same, they're like within two streets of one another, which is the same here in like Melbourne. It's the same in Sydney. I've been to places in Sydney and they've all, like I go into a news agency in Sydney in this one place and they're speaking Italian and I speak to them in Italian and they've got Il Globo everywhere. And like, it's a lot because you had, like my grandmother's generation, so Rose's character, Giuseppina, in the film, which represents the Italians that migrated, and they didn't change. They did stay because they had community, and it's quite beautiful because I'll go to my nunnas and she'll go, oh, Perina gave you tomato, Sarah, from her garden. And they still, that's how they exchange things. But then you have like the children, which is my mum's generation's, Adrian's mum's generation, who my mother on the phone, like she creates a whole persona. It's a whole different persona. Like her voice changes from that Italian accented because she speaks obviously Italian English. And so when I approached being Netta, it was really like Adrian and I would talk about, because Giuseppina speaks fluent, perfect Italian. Like her Italian is, I don't want to say off the boat, but like from the proper Italian. Whereas it was really important for me to layer into Netta that it's a different kind of Italian. It's an Australianized Italian that's kind of a socially acceptable, but like goes in and out of English as well. So there's all these beautiful nuances that we wanted to put into the character to really represent how, like the difficult struggle of like her wanting to assimilate, I think out of necessity, because there's so much shame and that's like underneath it. And that's, I think when I said it was touching after I watched this film, I was like, oh wow, I feel like we've all had some shame around being being an immigrant. And I think people will, a lot of different Mediterranean or anyone who's a migrant can relate to that shame of being, feeling like you have to be a certain way or fit into a certain box to be able to survive every day. And that's why the armor comes up and the persona for Netta comes up. And she is like, she's got to be tough to be able, like she's living in Footscray as well. So I think about Perth, that's probably, you know, like off from the city, you know, Footscray was rough. It was like, I interviewed my mum's friend who is exactly like Netta. And she goes, our first house we bought was in Footscray and I was scared. I would run from the car to the house because I was scared. And I was like, wow, it's a different time. And so I think Adrian's done a beautiful job to create the character or share his story, but then also in the direction of the film, we have layered all these things in. And for the first person watching it, they might not see it, and that's fine. But I think for people who can relate to the story, they laugh and they like, when that nurse can't spell her name, it's like, it's something I think we all probably went through. And it's so simple, but, and some, I know some people have feel like, oh, she's really quite mean to the woman, but she's been experienced this like for years. Like she's 35, she's been probably experienced this for 30 years that people don't know her name. And so there's all those beautiful little details that to someone goes, oh okay, but to us it was like, yeah, it was really a fucking struggle. Like
and even growing up, you know, in my generation, like, you know, I've been very, very privileged compared to how my mum grew up, but still, like, I always get asked a lot of the time from people, like, you know, do you consider yourself white? And I'm like, well, I mean, ethnically, yes, but culturally here, not so much. Like, I don't, like when I go to America and people say, where are you from? And I go, Australia. They go, well, you don't look it. It's like, well, yeah, because I don't look like a white Australian. You know, I've still got an Italian nose, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I do want to talk about the idea of shame in a little bit. But before I do that, I want to talk about the relationship that you have, Sarah and Max, like building that mother-son relationship. Max, what kind of things did you do to help build that and strengthen that relationship?
Yeah, so like at rehearsals, me and Sarah, after rehearsal one time, she took me to Time Zone and we'd play like lots of those arcade games, win some stuff, you know. She'd also buy me lollies and, you know, at a rehearsal because Adrian goes for Carlton and that's who I'm playing, you know. So she bought cupcakes, Carlton cupcakes with like sparklers coming out of them or whatever. And
was it a grand final day or something? We had a rehearsal on some.
Yeah. It was something. But yeah. And then also, as Netta, she'd asked me some questions. So she's like, oh, who's your favorite superhero? And I'm like, Batman. So like a week later or something like that, she got me a present, which was a Batman like comic figure. Had like a note in it and all that. So yeah.
And Sarah, what kind of things would you do to help build that bond between you two?
Well, I think like from off the bat, I think even when I met up with Adrian the first time, it's like, this is really important. This is what the whole story is about, like a mother and son. I don't have a child. I have a fur baby, but that's different. But so for me, it was important to kind of in every rehearsal, like get to know Max, because, you know, notoriously young boys are a little bit hard and introverted and don't like to kiss or cuddle. Maybe girls are a little bit more touchy. But so I think every rehearsal, we were just building that relationship. And it was doing outings. Like the first, even before we even started, I think months before we started pre-production, we went out, Adrian took us all out for dinner. So Rosa, me, Max, and just like we were doing little activities like that to do it in a more organic sense, to build our relationship. So we would hug, and this kind of was beautiful, because then on set there are times, and then we got some behind the scene photos, and I looked at them the other day, and there's one time I'm just hugging Max. I don't know, I think we're both really cold, we've both got like big puffer jackets on.
One through the doorway and you hug him from behind.
Yes, yeah, and I'm hugging him from behind just to be like, it's all good. And I think on the last day of filming, we filmed all the car scenes, and we would both just, you know, I'd be fixing his hair and just little details that are like such a mother and son, and we'd check in with one another if it was a particularly difficult scene to see if he's okay, like how are you doing, or yeah, just every minute, or what would you like to eat? Do you need something? All those things, like taking care of one another. And I loved it because it was more, you know, Max and Sarah forming that bond so that it could just really exist on screen without like a forcefulness. So I think like even in the scenes, I think like when I'm smoking, we just came and I was like, oh, I don't want you to smell that smoke. And that came up in a, like, of course, my baby, I don't want him to inhale smoke. So I got really quite, actually got very protective of Max. And I know Adrian experienced it on one day. I was like, no, Max isn't doing something. And yeah, so it just kind of like mother bit like that, like he was my cub, kind of came really beautifully through the rehearsals. And we did like intense rehearsals, because I think Adrian and I, we both knew that this is the heart of the story, so this needs to really breathe. And it was beautiful because people, I think when we were cast, were like, you look so similar.
Yeah, yeah.
I think because his dad's from where my family's from in Italy, so it was like a really nice connection.
Yeah, people say all the time, like, wow, they really look like a mother and a son.
Yeah.
I'm like, thank God. And we got every rehearsal as well with the game of Uno, and we got to
see, yes.
Oh, yeah.
Max is very good, and I could get really boisterous and scream when I won. Like, I don't
Sarah is very competitive.
Yeah, so it was like, I don't think Adrian, I don't think you won much though. I think we were like,
yeah,
I was purposely losing.
What's it like then getting to see that relationship on set for you, Adrian? Like, it's got to be taking you back to your youth and the memories that have helped form this script. Like, that's got to be quite the experience, right?
Yeah, it was weirdly cathartic and confronting. Like, there was just like some scenes, like, you know, you're trying to, like, you know, you're at the monitor and you're watching Max and Sarah and Rosa like perform, and you're trying to, you know, put your director brain on and be analytical and try and work out, like, are they doing it right? Is the camera work right? And doing all these things. But sometimes I would just get, like, lost in watching them, because it would be just so weirdly surreal. Like, you know, a lot of the dialogue in the film is stuff that I heard and said and my mum still says now. And it's weirdly confronting, especially, like, I think we're all going to agree, like, the scene with Sarah and Rosa in the kitchen at Nonna's house, like, that scene was just full on, like, like, just watching that whole scene escalate from, like, you know, to the slap was just very, very confronting. And my mum was on set that day. She was doing the catering. And it's funny, a funny story is we shot that scene, and then we shot the bit after when she leaves after the slap, and she's like, you know, get in the car, we're going. And my mum at the time was inside packing up all the catering. And she called me that night and she said, Adrian, I couldn't stop laughing when Sarah was doing that, let's get in the car line. And I said, why? And she goes, because I remember doing that so many times. And I was like, yeah, I know, I was there. I remember it too. Like, and she was just going, it's just spot on, like, how it was.
But with underpinning all of that kind of the memories and stuff, there, this is a very tense story at times. Like, it is quite a you know, it's difficult to get through, like, in a satisfying way, because the friction is there and it's so real. It feels so real that you feel uncomfortable at times, and you feel like you just want to be able to give both of these characters a hug and say, it's going to be okay. Ignore the rest of the world. Don't worry about it. You'll find your own path. But for all three of you, how do you keep yourself safe on set, going through those scenes and looking through that and going through those moments, like with the slap or the tense moments in the car or the medical scenes for you, Max? Like, they're all hard things to carry and step out of. So how do you get through that process?
I think we'll all have a different answer, because we've probably got our own different way of doing it.
Yeah.
For me, it was, I just like to surround myself with a good cast and crew, and, you know, a good producer, a good AD, good actors, and just people who are there to do the work and do it well and are passionate. And that helps me just, like, go, okay, I know this is intense, but we're doing something good, you know. And, and, you know, I had, you know, my AD, Sandra, would see me stressed on set, and she'd always find a way to make me not stressed. You know, just having the right people who know you and know what makes you tick and how to get you off out of your own head, I guess. That's my thing, but I'm sure you guys have your own.
Well, you know, after all the, like, you know, in the bar scenes, like when Sarah's yelling at me, like, you know, full on yelling and all that, since, like, everyone in the crew, like, everyone was pretty much like a family. So, like, after all those scenes, like, everyone just came up to me and gave me a massive hug and all that. And, like, oh, are you okay? And all that stuff. And then same with, like, Sarah. Like, later on that night, she'd always send me messages after, like, all the intense stuff, like the argumental scenes and all that. So she's always, like, are you doing well? Like, hoping, you know, it's all fake and all that stuff. And, like, making sure I was okay and everything like that. So
my process is probably a little bit different. And I think everyone on set kind of got to know who I am as an actor and as a character, but I do need a lot of more silence in a sense. Like, so Adrian, but this was kind of, it was kind of agreed upon prior to filming that if there was a space I could have, even if it's like, you know, there's a tiny space, just to be able to go in and decompress on my own, because it is a lot of tension on her shoulders and there's a lot of emotion, whether it's being repressed or coming out. I just needed to have like a little space for myself. And I think another way, because you're on set, it can be quite difficult with so much sounds, and that's just uncontrollable when you're in an environment like on the street or something. I did have music just to be able to distance myself from the material so that I was feeling safe and looked after. I had a ritual at night. I love baths. I love that ritual of kind of water, take, whether it's just even a shower kind of takes it off for the day. Those kinds of things, I think when you're working, you get used to. And it was particularly hard the day when I was screaming at Max. It was a harder day for me. And I did have to go into a room and just let a lot out as well, like just releasing. So having mechanisms and an infrastructure to release, I have a bit more of a process around that. And I think some people on the set, I know Adrian probably has a story of people being like, they would ask me a question and my tone was very direct and very netter, because when I'm in it and, you know, before we're filming a scene, I'm probably already dropped into what she is, and it's not malicious or anything. It's just like, I would be very direct in my answers. And I think people are like, oh, and if Adrian wants to tell the story of our DP, he had an experience. You can tell it.
There's a great little story. I'll say it quick, but yeah. So like our DP Tavis, he met Sarah on the table read, and he met the real Sarah, the lovely Sarah. And then we get to like day one and we're shooting, and Sarah's very netta, like, throughout majority of the shoot, you know, very in the zone, and would be very, you know, short and very this, and, you know, because she's just trying to keep that mindset. And I think by day three, my DP was like, you know, she all right? and I had to explain that, and she's in the zone, like. And then it wasn't until the day before our last day, was our rehearsal setup day, and Sarah came that day, and, you know, she was just being herself. And our DP was there and they were chatting. And then on the drive home, our DP said, oh, I forgot how nice she is in real life. And I was like, yeah, that's the real her.
And I have a straighter hair than Netta. And he's like, oh, she looks so different. That's not who I've been working with for the
Yeah.
last
He forgot how much he
month.
transformed into the role.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's the thing as well. It's like you're embodying history and you're embodying a culture that has been layered up over time. And obviously the film's called Westgate, and I won't go into too much of the ending, but I do want to touch on the tragedy of that, you know, is associated with that particular bridge, which for a lot of people, they might not think about it. Every single day they're driving over the bridge. But for a certain subsection of culture, it's on their mind, right? Even decades later, it's on their mind. And there is this beautiful honoring of that past here in the film. And I'm curious if you can each talk about what it means to be able to honor that tragedy through a story like this on screen.
Well, for me, it means everything. I mean, I'm not sure how much you know about Footscray geography, but growing up in Footscray, I've been here my whole life. The Westgate Bridge is just over there, you know, and it's always been this like looming structure that I've always been. I mean, I wanted to be an architect originally, so I always found the bridge like beautifully aesthetic, and I was, you know, I always liked how the bridge looked. And then, but you know, driving over the bridge and driving under the bridge where the actual memorial plaque is, you know, on the pillar, which takes you to Williamstown, which I used to go to a lot when I was younger. I was always fascinated by that plaque, and I'd often go there and look at it and read the names. And my mum would talk about how she was 10 years old when it collapsed and how she was only like 1 kilometer away and she thought there was an earthquake. And I think if you're an Italian who grew up in the inner western suburbs, or even in any kind of immigrant, you know, a Maltese or a Greek or whatever, everyone knows someone who was involved in that tragedy, you know. So for me, it was, I feel like I'm sort of honoring not just my heritage, but my community and everything in telling of this story.
For me, like it was in our culture. I remember going over the bridge and my dad talking about it. But also my family on my dad's side were all in construction. So it could have been one of them quite easily working on that bridge for me. So it was always kind of known because a lot of the immigrants in Melbourne, I'm not sure, I think in Perth as well, a lot were in construction and like a lot of them were in construction. Like my grandfather, my nonno, he was like had an accident in construction, not on the bridge, but it is a part of like our lineage and our story of like the immigration and how they worked to survive, and those were the jobs that they were given, and everyone remembers that because they were all immigrants, whether they were Scottish as well. And when getting the opportunity to do this film, I researched it, and you know what's really tragic about it? It is a tragedy that kept going as well, because they were men that actually passed away after the bridge as well from the trauma. There were heart attacks, there was depression. So it is something that, even though we have memorials for it, there are even people in Melbourne that don't know the story as well, which is, for me, blows my mind. But it's beautiful to commemorate it in this film in a nuanced way, in a way that it goes, this isn't about the collapse. It's about the people and the aftermath and what it can do in the scheme of someone's life, like their story, and how it can change who they are at the core, because there were a lot of children that lost parents. And they probably lost, like in the case with Giuseppina, they lost both parents as well, because that parent then had to survive and be the breadwinner. So in Italian culture, that there was no time to be able to be a parent. And that's a story I relate with and my mother relates with, you know, and they never did it on purpose. It's because they were literally thrown on a boat, their parents still in Italy, and told to, okay, go live, not speaking the language. And that's what those immigrants that did pass away on the bridge had as well. So it's really quite a lot. And I think it's beautiful that this story shows the impact that tragedy can have on someone's choices in life and how it actually forms someone's identity. So it is a story about identity as well, which now I think about it.
How much did you know, Max, about it?
Yeah, Max.
Pardon?
Did you know much about it, Max?
Well, I mean, not really. Like ever since I got it, I've kind of been I've looked into it and all that, but I guess as Julian really hit like kind of being oblivious to it and all that stuff, like even if you like have wanting to take the bridge, even though oh kind of doesn't make sense. Wait.
go with your train of thought.
Like, like taking the Westgate to footy, like the quickest way we can, like not knowing like what Netta's like kind of gone through and like her struggle, you know, of going over the Westgate. So yeah.
You're able to use that in the character, not knowing too much about the Westgate. Exactly. That's perfectly aligning with what Julian. Didn't know anything. I remember being on set with Max, and I had to tell him what a VHS was and show him the VHS. I felt so old.
Actually, two of the funnest things I did for Max in rehearsals were like I gave Max the Game Boy and the cigarette rollers, and I said, Max, by the time we shoot, I want you to be an expert on rolling cigarettes and playing a Game Boy, and he was.
I remember what happened when I got it, like I said about the screen and all that.
Yeah, so I gave Max the Game Boy and he turned it on and he said, oh, the light isn't working. I went, no, there weren't lights on those.
Yeah,
they were just that dark browny green.
We had to spend a lot of money on getting this thing that used to strap onto the front of it and it would light up the screen and then magnify it. Yeah, it's what kind
of... Back in the story.
Yeah, exactly. What games were you playing on the Game Boy?
It's just Mario, like the...
Super Mario.
I only got to the furthest I've gotten is I think I went past into the fire stage.
That's
probably the furthest I've gone. Like
it's tough, isn't it?
It's tough. No,
it is.
With your fingers like this instead of on a nice big.
But that's the thing. It's like it changes over time, right? But it's I don't know. I think that it's quite beautiful to know that your understanding of Westgate obviously aligns with your character, but it's this recognition or understanding that trauma lives within us, even though we have no idea what it is, right? You know, younger generations might not know, but it lingers. And that's what I think the film does really well, is it explores that. And it's not just about, obviously, the tragedy, but it's about trying to find a place in the world. And again, those 2 feet in two separate worlds with never actually truly standing in one and trying to feel like you are part of a society that still at that time didn't really know what to do. But with that said, I think, Adrian, maybe this is a good question to ask right now, which is the change from, you know, the late 90s, early 2000s to now. What do you feel has changed? Has it improved? Has much changed in Footscray in that realm?
Yeah, well, things have gone up and down in Footscray specifically, but I guess like as a society in Australia, I like to think that things have gotten, well, I mean, I would like to think they got better, but then you got these, you know, neo-Nazi protests about, you know, getting rid of immigrants, and it's just kind of disappointing to see how that's still a thing in this day and age, that people don't understand that this country was literally built by immigrants. You know, you've got like racist people going to all these rallies saying immigrants get out, and then they go into a Chinese restaurant for dinner. I mean, how idiotic can you possibly be? I mean, not only did we bring food and we brought culture and we bought infrastructure, like immigrants are the foundation to like any growing country. And we're a young country, you know, we're only the modern Australia, not like Australia. We're a young country, you know, we're still building and we need different cultures and people. So I'd like to think that in my sort of group of people who I know that it's gotten better, but then there's still, you know, the people out there who are against it, and I just can't get my head around it.
Yeah, I feel like it has changed within like different community groups. I think there's a real beauty of like connection, perhaps not on the white, like all groups of individuals, but I think there is like a real acknowledgement of different cultures and curiosity about embracing different cultures and this understanding of like being within two worlds. Like people do want to be educated around that. I had my wedding on the weekend, and there was an Italian, yes, thank you. Yeah. And there was an Italian custom that was done. And one of my friends, who's a beautiful cinematographer, Amy Della, who did First Light, she was there and she saw like my nonnas, they wrap like a charm on your arm just for good luck. And she was like, oh, what is that? What is that? And like, we use the word salute to like say, and just like, it was beautiful. And then I also have a deaf best friend. So this is another thing. And everyone was crying at her speech. You know, she signed and it was translated. So for me, like this weekend was just like such an eye-opener of the beauty, because even the staff were in tears at how lovely it was to see cross cultures interacting. And so there is, it does exist. I think it is changing. I think in cinema it is changing, especially with the younger independent scene in filmmaking in Melbourne. I would say in Perth is booming as well in the film. Like, these people are making those stories, whether it's in short films, that everyone is kind of dipping into it. And it's really lovely to see the younger generation go, oh no, I don't want to pretend I'm not that. I do want to tell my story that might be have a yah-yah, or, you know, like someone else, like the different cultures, or an Italian Greek, or, and it's beautiful because even when we put this film at MIFF, I had lovely filmmakers come up to me that, you know, are Italian, are Greek, and like they're being like, oh, let's stick this idea of community and let's stick together, let's support one another, whether we work together, who knows in the future. But there really was that, oh, this kind of relief that, oh, these stories are going to be told, and they're getting into MIFF and they're getting into festivals. So if it can start here in like Melbourne and Australia, then it can get internationally, and hopefully these stories will get more funding from, you know, the funding bodies and stuff. Because Adrian did do this quite independently with a very, very micro budget. But it's a testament to him because we were all so invested in the story because we haven't read this. There's no drugs in this story. There's no, like, physical abuse. There's no, you know, those things that sometimes make these films. So it's a rarity, like what Ala Brandi was, to get that opportunity, and that it got received so well, I think is a testament that it is changing.
Yeah. And it's funny that you mentioned the, you know, my thoughts on how things have changed, because I have a student from Melbourne Uni who's doing a review currently for the film for Melbourne Uni. And she asked me the other day on email, she said, how do you feel about all these protests? Because your film is significant now to this. And I didn't even consciously realize that this film about migration and assimilation is literally coming out at the time where all these people are protesting about immigration. And I thought, shit, that's really insane that it's timed up like that. And not just my film, you know, there's Pasifaho, there's Shader, like all these films about people coming to Australia for a better life and trying to assimilate, you know. And it just, yeah, I actually didn't, until she emailed me and said it's significant that your film is coming out during these world protests about immigration, it really made me go, oh crap, this could be very important to my cause, which is obviously pro-immigration.
And to get people to see, like, the heart, that these are real people, these are real stories, and they live on this land, and it's quite touching.
And you know, racists, they pick and choose. Like, no one's going to look at me and tell me to go home as an Italian, but they'll look at, you know, an Asian or an African and tell them to go home. It's ridiculous. Like, we're all the same. We all came here for a better life, you know?
And it's funny, like, because in my research, you know, as Italians, if you were from the South, in Melbourne particularly, I don't know, all over Australia, I read articles where you were called black.
Yeah.
Black Italians. So isn't it a bit exhausting that this is still,
yeah,
like, the same cycle of racism is still going on? Like, yeah, it's just gone, it just keeps shifting the different...
Yeah, yeah. Well, my mum would always say, you know, first it was the Italians, and then it was the Vietnamese, and then it was the Africans. And it's like every 10 years there was a new group that people were racist towards. You know, like, God, let it go.
And maybe this is our rebellion. This is our rebellion. It's the rebellion that these stories are being told now, and they're being told, and they're the ones that are getting seen. Like, the ones that are hard and about the people, which I think is, like, we won't get into that, but that's the core, like, just telling the stories, whatever, whoever they are, they're Australian stories. And that's, I think that gets forgotten, that we're all, these are all Australian stories. Shader, Pasifaho, First Light, like, all of these people exist.
You've all kind of answered the question, which I usually wrap up the interviews with, but I'm going to ask it anyway, because you might have, like, something, a yes and to it or something like that. But I tend to wrap up my interviews with talking with Australian filmmakers, asking about what it means to be an Australian filmmaker today. And Adrian, Sarah, you both talked about the purpose and the meaning of being able to tell these kinds of stories.
I'll go first. I guess for me, being an Australian filmmaker now, it's yeah, like, coming off what I said before, like, I guess I'm pretty honoured to be in the same group as the people, like, who are making, like, Shader and Pasifaho and all these people who are making these like introspective stories and like looking at themselves and where they came from and how it reflects who they are as a person. Yeah, like I did a panel with Sophie Somerville and James Litchfield for MIF for the Accelerator Lab, and the panelists asked us if they felt we were part of a new wave, and we both sort of all just went, I don't think that's for us to say, but I mean, it would be cool, you know, that we're all doing these interesting new stories and maybe putting Australian films back on the map or something. Like, so for me to be Australian filmmaker now, it's an honour to be included with my peers who are doing these kinds of stories. You know, even people like Sarah. Sarah's a filmmaker herself, and she's doing very interesting, she writes very interesting scripts, and we're making a film together soon as well. And you know, I'm honored to be part of this sort of new movement of like Melbourne filmmakers who are doing these sorts of films and doing things that I guess for me, I hope I haven't seen before. I'm always trying to make a film that hasn't been made at least, not ever, like that's impossible, but at least at like in this country or in this city, like something that hasn't been done before that I'm like, I'm going to do that version, but here, you know, and I feel like a lot of people are doing that now. So I feel quite honored to be part of that sort of movement. Mm-hmm.
I feel like it's just really galvanizing to see like what's coming out on screen. And for me, like I have a very much like a female centric, most of my crew is about 80% women or LGBTQ people, because it's something I really want to cultivate in filmmaking, because I've worked behind the scenes on very big budget films and I've just seen dynamics. And I was having this conversation with cinematographers and people who are also coming up, and we just want to be a part of the change of how films are made, even with this idea of accessibility, inclusivity, and just that it is about, I feel like when I'm on set on independent films or on the lower budget, there's this really beautiful community. Everyone is creatively collaborating. It's very energizing, supportive. Everyone is quite invested, and that's really exciting. And it was exciting to meet people on MIF opening night and just hear their experiences and to see how everyone really, like, they knew my work or I knew their work. And there's this beautiful community that is really, it's coming out, and I'm sure it's in all the states as well. But it was really hopeful, because there's like I think there's like a bravery coming back to cinema that existed in the 1970s or the 1960s in films. I feel like people are being really brave in their choices or how they're going to make films. And the art, like the craftsmanship, seems to be really like being rebirthed again in a modern way, which is exciting. Like the way filmmakers think about it, how a story can visually reflect how it's also going to be told. There's all that detail and nuance that is finding a breath or life in the work. And maybe it's from creatively resourceful, because money might be low, but then that's exciting to me. That's, I feel like it will be a really interesting next 10 years in film, because we have a lot of American stuff coming, but I think off the back of them filming here, there's a lot more Australian indies that want to work and make things that might be the antithesis of what's might maybe, you know, we've just had a lot of action films be filmed in Melbourne. So hopefully we have a lot more drama or like very, I think that's it, character driven. That's what I'm really excited about. I think there are filmmakers going back to, I think of Cassavetes and all of them who as an actor I love, because they were character driven. Those stories that might be about something very, might appear to be something small, but you see how it molds a person's life. And that's, I think we are in that age.
Yeah, I'll agree with Sarah on character driven things is what I'm also passionate about. And also, yeah, also having, also championing female stories and female filmmakers for Westgate, because obviously Sarah is a, you know, female lead. I didn't want to have a crew full of men. So I made a very conscious choice to have as many females on set. I think we had actually mostly females on set. I think I did the numbers. We had mostly more females than men on set at each time, because the whole production design team and the camera assistants were female. And I wanted to have a lot of women on set to make sure Sarah didn't feel overwhelmed by too many men.
And it's a female. It's a mother daughter. Yeah, there's layers. So it was really nice that 20 years ago it would have still been a male dominated set. So that's also going, oh, wow, this is it. Our industry is, it is changing.
It really is. I think that's a beautiful way of wrapping up. Thank you so much to all of you for the conversation, Max, Sarah, Adrian. I so greatly appreciate it. Yeah.
No, thank you, Andrew. That was so much fun.
And also, news, I am about to announce in the next hour or two, we are playing...
Oh, congratulations. Yes, I did see the email come through, so congratulations for that.
That's our next
well
month,
done.
Next month.
Yeah, it's a great festival, that one. I've not actually been, but I cover it from afar at least, and there's been some really great films screening there, so...
It has a great lineup this year. Yeah. I was like, oh, why didn't they come? Like, I'm going to be overseas, but I was like, oh, they're good lineup.
Yeah, it is.
What a good lineup. I'm like, damn.